this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
So, Wheeler, I did a very Texas thing the other day. I've lived here 26 years, and as you know, 25 years, 24 years. I don't know how long I've lived here, but I've lived here for a few minutes, whatever.
You just spent like 20 seconds knowing how long you've been here, but go ahead.
And I haven't even cracked the beer yet either.
Maybe you need to. Go ahead and open that.
So I went down last weekend to go to fish the Laguna Madre.
Oh, okay.
And I've never done that before.
Yeah, it's down there by south of Corpus.
South of Corpus.
Kind of closer to Padre Island.
Yeah, it's kind of the, you know, Mustang Island, Baffin Bay, yeah. King Ranch, all that right there. It was fantastic.
Did you catch anything?
I caught a lot of stuff. My friends caught a heck of a lot more than me. And as we're sitting there, we're out there 2 days, full days on the water. And, you know, occasionally there are barges that go back and forth. And we pass this huge barge full of sand.
Did they dredge
pristine
it up?
Pristine sand. Dredge sand is usually a little dirtier, I think.
So they're dropping it off at a beach out there somewhere.
Close. That's what I thought. You know where it's going? Elon Musk.
Oh, what?
They just had a launch down there.
Yeah. And they blew all the sand out.
They blew the sand out. and he bought a barge full of sand to take back down there.
How did you find that out?
Our guide, our outfitter, said, oh, yeah, there's another barge going down Elon Musk's place.
Another big shipment of sand.
So we caught a bunch of fish. The fish is in a cooler that my buddies took back to their place. And I bought all this beer I was going to drink on this podcast with you. Nueces Brewing Company, fantastic stuff.
And y'all finished all of it off there?
No.
Is that what happened?
It's in the cooler with the fish.
Oh, geez. I don't want it now.
I know.
It's
sealed
like
in a can, though.
Yeah, but, you know, the outside of it, you're going to have to clean that off before you hand it to me, even though I do like fish. And I eat raw fish, too.
I won't give it to you.
So you caught a lot, though. That's really good.
Caught a lot.
You just got a message, by the way, from
our
boss.
Yeah.
I'm looking
this
at your phone.
This is the Y'allitics Emperor.
Yeah.
Is there a Y'allitics story?
That's what
coming
she's
up.
Asking for. I'm glad she's asking you and not me.
I'll make sure that Wheeler gets on that.
So Laguna Madre, by the way, for people who haven't
been. What does that mean in Spanish?
It means the Mother Lagoon.
Yeah, see?
And so it's a beautiful area,
right,
though. And I haven't been down there in years, but it wasn't very developed, that whole area, when I went down there. Was it developed when you went?
No. It's the King Ranch, the Kennedy Ranch. I mean, there's nothing there. Cell phones don't work.
So this is on your way as you're heading down toward Brownsville. But beautiful out there, though, and I like how unspoiled it is. I was down there many, many years ago doing a story on a guy who was living out there in this little shack on the water with no electricity, no gas, no nothing. It was a tie-in to Survivor. He was a real-life Survivor kind of guy.
And that was his residence?
Totally, totally off the grid. And at the time, I thought, man, this guy is wild. Now I look back and think, this guy may have had the answer.
he knew what he was doing, smart guy. And, you know, there are a lot of these houses on the water. They're called fishing shacks.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, 500-600-700 yards offshore.
Yeah.
And they're tied to a piling out there.
Sounds like a good life.
Yeah, and they have, you know, people come in and out, and you can rent them to go fishing in.
More and more.
And they were a big deal in the 60s and 70s, evidently. And Texas Parks and Wildlife and the General Land Office doesn't issue permits for them anymore.
I'm telling you, one of these days, I'm going to figure it out like those people have and just disconnect. And on that note, I'm going to open my beer.
I wish you guys, people who are watching this instead of listening to it, I wish you could see his computer. I didn't know computers actually did this. Computers can do a lot of things.
Jason was aghast.
He has so many tabs open on his computer. It's like a rainbow bar at the top.
It is. I think I have right now like 84 tabs open. And I need every one of them.
How do you know what you have open?
Because I remember, and I just go through and scroll across it until I find the one that I'm looking for. This is how many different things I'm working on at any given time. That's why the boss is asking you if we have a podcast story.
Because I'm the harder worker,
No, because she knows you've got nothing else going on. She knows I've got 84 tabs open. She's not going to be the 85th.
What are you drinking, man?
I'm having the 4/6 Grit and Glory Pilsner today.
That's good.
It's a good beer.
Yeah, this is...
It's from Fort Worth, right?
No, 4/6, is it Fort Worth?
I think it is. Yeah, it's... I don't know. Usually they say it really easily here. Well, I mean, I know where to look on here.
Evidently you don't know where to look because you can't find it. No, it's from Colorado. It's from California.
Oh, it says California.
It's from California.
Did not realize that. Okay.
You know, here you are, bringing California beer
to a
Texas podcast.
Well, they've got a Texas. Look at the Texas, though. They've got little Texas emblems all over it. Very smart,
and
4-6s.
The 4-6s is down there in South Texas.
Are they?
Yeah, that's where the ranch is.
This says
it was a King Ranch?
Okay, but this says it was brewed or canned, rather, and brewed and canned in San Jose, California.
Yeah, well played, Wheeler. Well played.
It had the Texas emblem on it.
So I'm drinking a Texas beer. This is my go-to. It's Manhattan Project Beer Company. We've had several podcasts there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Pilsner. It's called Necessary Evil.
Yeah. Oh, can I, real quickly, before we get into this, since we're taking all this time anyway, give a very quick shout-out?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because there were a couple of people.
Melissa Caldwell, right?
Melissa, very good. Michael and Melissa Caldwell.
Yes.
They're big into Lakewood. Was it Lakewood Brewery? Is that the one she was talking to us about?
I don't remember her saying a brewery.
The one in downtown Dallas that they
Westlake.
Like a lot.
Westlake,
that's
what I'm
Westlake. Thinking of.
We've been to Westlake, man.
Westlake.
Come on, dude.
I'm sorry, I got my lakes mixed up there. We got Laguna Madre, we got lakes. So they're really big fans of that. We've been there several times, so a big shout out to them. We also had this guy on Twitter, and you didn't see this because, you know, you don't have a million tabs open like I do. And so I see these messages as they come across, and I actually respond.
And what do you say?
This is from the Law Office of James T. Martin Criminal Defense account. It says, when do we get the After Dark episode of Yolitics where both Jasons have had 5 beers each? That sounds phenomenal as we record this today.
We've already had some of those episodes. You might not have known that. You know?
We're going to have to work on one of those. That sounds amazing when you've got 84 tabs open on your computer.
We know where to get a criminal defense attorney,
to
too.
That. Yeah, which is maybe helpful.
Yeah, maybe James should come drink one of these with us, man. So you brought this topic up for today.
And yeah.
It's a good topic. I've heard about it for years that I've lived in Texas.
Seems like it's just kind of gotten a little bit more organized with a site and so forth. We're talking about the idea of, you know, Texas independence via secession. And there's this whole site, you know, and they've got this pledge on there. And basically the pledge says that, you know, these people who sign it and you know, they have a bunch of different people listed. You know, we're just going by what their site is saying here. They've got candidates for office. They've got some people who, you know, they list some people who are already in office here in Texas. And there's a lot of them.
And these people are saying what? So all these candidates are and office holders, current office holders.
Or candidates, just candidates.
They're saying
office.
That they would support Texas seceding from the United States, if it ever got to that point, right?
Yeah, well, so they say they pledged to put the interests of Texas and Texans above all others, which, you know, ostensibly would include the United States, and it says, if it's within the powers of my office, I will vote for legislation and resolutions to call for a vote on Texas reasserting its status as an independent nation in every term that I'm elected until a referendum is held.
So it's not make America great again, it's make Texas great again.
Yeah, but, you know, some would argue that, you know, maybe things weren't so great for Texas back when it was independent,
right,
and that it probably would go much, much worse if it tried to do it again. But they're trying to get this before voters, and they, you know, basically say if voters would approve it, then, you know, they would kind of work toward that end. You know, all of this assuming that the United States would just go, well, okay, you decided to leave, that's fine, you know.
You talk about far out topics here. You would think that we're 5 beers in, you know, for doing this topic.
We may need to be.
That's not the case, though. Yeah, this would be kind of worst case scenario. So, you pitched the topic, you found a terrific guest we're about to talk to in just a moment here. What I was surprised about, and I bring it up with the guest here in just a minute, is who the people are who signed this, who are on the TakeTexasBack.com or .org or something like that?
I'm not
like
sure
that.
What the actual address is. I can look it up.
Yeah,
I think it's in my tabs.
Yeah, it's probably one of the 400
actually,
tabs.
Actually, it is in my tabs.
Is it really?
Look at this. Hold on.
That's
I can go almost right to it. It just takes me like 4 clicks, and there I am. There it is.
TakeTexasBack.com is the name of the site. So if you go to the site, it'll say, like, you know, who are we? And then you start looking at the pictures and the names of folks in here.
And the offices that they hold or want to hold. And according to the website, all of these people have signed this.
And I fully expect it, to be completely transparent, there'd be a bunch of white guys in here saying, you know, let's go back to the way it was when Texas was an independent country. Whites, blacks, Latinos, there are Asians in there. There's a woman immigrant who's Muslim in there who signed it. All kinds of people. So I start clicking on some of these names, and they have a number of different reasons for wanting this. That really shocked me, the diversity in people who are calling for it.
So, you know, this is all according to this site here, and so we decided we need to talk to somebody about this because it does seem like the calls have gotten louder on this. But is that just because we're all connected by computers now and we see things like this web page? We see things like the Dallas Morning News, which called out this web page and the people listed on it before the primary election as a warning to voters. Does it seem louder just because we see this stuff now as opposed to years ago when this stuff was talked about and just didn't go that far, it didn't have that kind of reach? So we got Dr. Eric McDaniel from the University of Texas at Austin. He's a government professor there on the line to talk about this with us because, you know, it's one thing to talk about this stuff. It would be another thing to execute this and actually create your own independent government like this. And so we wanted to know from him, you know, what that looks like, number one. Is this really a possibility, number two? And then also to talk about some of the history of this because, you know, it always feels like, you know, it's the craziest in your time or that things are, you know, louder in your time. But, you know, we wanted to pick somebody's brain who actually has a good finger on history.
And he's a good one. Take a listen.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. For another smart conversation on Eolitics.
Professor McDaniel, thanks so much for joining us to talk about this topic. This is something that isn't new as far as a topic is concerned. It seems like we hear these kinds of rumblings from time to time. But this time, it looks like, at least here in Texas anyway, this is a little more organized, perhaps, than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say there's always this antagonist relationship between the state of Texas and the federal government. But I think with the increased level of populism that swept over the nation, that we see a more formal attempt to think about ways of Texas seceding from the United States.
So the Take Texas Back pledge is what Wheeler and I have been talking about here. It kind of got this podcast episode going. So I was going through the list of people that have signed this who said that they would support Texas first and this idea of secession. You know what struck me on this is that, you know, call it stereotyping or not, but I expected one group of people to be in this group. And there are pictures of people up there, their names, bios, and everything on these individuals, these office holders, former candidates, current candidates, etc. The group is white, it's black, it's Asian, Latino. There's even a Muslim woman in there who immigrated to Texas. That's not what I expected to see.
I think it's going to be, this is interesting to see how diverse that group is. Typically, you think it would be more your white conservatives in the state of Texas, but I think there is kind of a growing sense of populism of the federal government has failed, and there's this push of moving things more local, that if the state was granted more power or if it became its own independent nation, it could fix a lot of the problems that cannot be fixed by the federal government.
Did it surprise you to see that it was such a diverse crowd?
Yes, it is. It is somewhat surprising, but Given the nature of Texas and how Texas is changing, this would not be able to advance if it was not a diverse crowd.
Just to give people an idea, if they haven't been to this pledge page, it includes candidates across Texas for sheriff, constable, several Board of Education candidates, and some current members of the board, and at least one legislator. But we know that there will be more legislators because some of the candidates who were on there are uncontested this year. We know that the Speaker Phelan, Dade Phelan, who is the House Speaker here in Texas, he has a runoff coming up. His opponent is listed on there. 11 of the candidates who signed on were beaten in their primaries. 5 of them are in runoffs right now, and 7 of them won their primaries. Why is it, do you think, Professor McDaniel, that we didn't really see this necessarily in ads? We saw ads about the border, about, you know, school choice, vouchers, et cetera. It doesn't seem like we saw any candidates who are for this coming out in an ad and saying, I've signed this pledge. And it doesn't seem like we've seen many ads I haven't seen any ads from opponents saying, hey, be wary of this person. They signed this.
I don't think it's really going to resonate that much with the broad set of voters. I think it'll resonate with their base, but I don't think it'll resonate with the large set of voters. Furthermore, it can be seen as a bit fringe, which raises the question, why have the opponents brought it up? I think while it could be seen as a bit fringe, given that there's a strong culture in Texas about the independence of Texas and the uniqueness of Texas, that criticizing someone for, I guess, holding on to uniqueness of Texas might be more costly than pointing them out for the fringeness of this take.
I guess just, you know, because it wasn't really in a lot of ads and so forth, most voters may not have even known that someone they were voting for or against had signed this pledge. I only saw one editorial in this state that took this on in the newspaper, and it was the usually right-leaning editorial board there at the Dallas Morning News. They put out this urge or this call to voters in the Republican primary just days before the primary with the headline, "Texas Voters Beware of Pro-Secession Candidates." They went on to say that, you know, these contributions for these candidates or for this movement is coming from an oil billionaire, that it is a political action committee, and that this is not being patriotic, essentially, these people who are signing on to this. So we did see that light shined on this. I just don't know how many people, how many voters who went to the polls in the primaries really even knew about this or thought about this at all.
I don't think many did. And it's given the low amount of news coverage, I think many people in the media probably didn't see it as something that noticeable, something that actually care about. But seeing that, you can think of the, you said, the conservative lady editorial board there, is this idea of this is a little too far, that there is a sense of conservatism of, you know, states' rights, we still want to be a part of the union, but this is going too far. And this, in many ways, we can see that as betraying what we really mean by conservatism, by being willing to actively go against the nation.
Yeah, let's talk about numbers for a moment here, too, because you saw this YouGov poll, Y-O-U-G-O-V. It's a polling group out there that does a lot of polls, but it asked a question back in February of 35,000 Americans nationwide, whether you want to see your state secede. I've been afraid I'd mess that up the whole time. Succeed or secede. But the question was, how many Americans want their state to secede? And Texas, California, and Alaska had the largest amounts. Texas had 31% of those polled who said that. Not necessarily surprising. About a third of the state or more is diehard Republican and more populist in thought. But did those numbers surprise you at all?
Not really. There's increasing frustration with Washington, and the more attention we pay on that, we pay attention to Washington and what we consider to be an ineffective Congress, a Supreme Court that might not be held in check, or an ineffective president, there's this really push for more state control. California would see the nation is moving too far to the right. Texas would argue that the nation is moving too far to the left. Something like Alaska, I mean, they're so far away that we shouldn't be surprised by that. You know, Texas takes pride in the fact that it was its own independent nation. And historically, the state has fought the federal government. I mean, if you think of Governor Abbott, what he said he did as Attorney General, he'd wake up in the morning, eat breakfast, go see the federal government, and then repeat the next day.
Professor, is there a danger? You know, I mean, we hear about this in other states. We hear it being talked about a lot here in Texas now. Is there a danger when you have a lot of loose talk about the idea of secession and, you know, public officials, elected officials, actually, you know, pledging that they will pursue this in the form of bills and referendums? Is there a danger of loose talk with that?
Yes. I think anytime you start talking about these things where you are openly, there can be a criticism of the federal government, but when you are openly talking about kind of the illegitimacy of the federal government in relation to you, it can create problems. So if there is a disaster, you know, or if there is the need for the federal government to step in on certain things, that these individuals will get in the way. And so this prevents a lot of things that the federal government can do to help people to be undermined. And also it can seriously hamper the federal government's attempt to implement policy.
But you mentioned that
You've mentioned that over time, though, we've heard this, we've heard these rumblings, as long as the state's been around. As a government professor, though, what catalyst or trigger or threshold do you look for that would be especially a cause for concern when it comes to this issue, where it kind of starts to take on a momentum of its own?
So I think saying that you would like to secede is... it's kind of like, yeah, I'd like to quit my job. Like, people say that a lot. And they don't necessarily.
I say that like every week.
I can vouch for that. Wheeler does say that.
Yeah. And so a good portion of people are serious about it, but a lot of people just are not. I think when you start seeing this move really into the 40s or 50s, that's when you know you've got an issue. So if we assume that maybe, two-thirds of the people are just saying it because, like, yeah, I'm just sick of all this, but one-third is very is committed to it. And I think about 50% of the people, that's more than 50% of people saying that, that's more than 50% of the population agreeing with this. And that's a substantial size of the population. And if they're, like, hardcore, we want to leave, that presents all kinds of problems, not just in terms of how the state operates in terms of the state legislature, also the delegation that goes to Congress.
Let's talk about the legality of all this. Getting ready for this interview, Professor, I was kind of looking around and I ran across an article that I think you were quoted in. It's from the Texas Tribune, June of 2022, almost 2 years ago. And it talks about this 1869 Supreme Court case, Texas versus White. And the court held then that individual states could not unilaterally secede from the Union, and that acts of the insurgent Texas legislature, even if ratified by a majority of Texans, were absolutely null. And it goes on to talk about the only way that this could happen would be, was it revolution through consent of the states, or I think that was it, revolution or consent of the states. Consent of the states, absent a revolution, is the other idea that people are talking about. And I've heard some people say that, Governor Abbott really wanted to have a convention of the states to talk about a number of issues, and he was among the Republican leaders kind of leading that over the past 3 or 4 years. Do you think we'll get to a point where the states actually convene, where there are enough states who say we want to hold a convention of the states to re-examine issues of, the federal government, of the U.S. Constitution?
I think that'd be very difficult, given how polarized the states are, and the way you're seeing either states are deeply blue or deeply red. It'd be very difficult to get them to come together. And furthermore, if there would have to be kind of a major collapse of the federal government to see the states come together. And right now, if a Republican's in office, the Republican states are invested in the federal government, and if a Democrat's in office, the Democrats are invested. And so you would need something where both Republicans and Democrats were not invested in who's in office for this to come about. And this is also one of the reasons, and given that we have 50 states, it's much more difficult to pull this off. This is part of the reason why we have not seen a constitutional amendment pass in so long, because it's just much more difficult because there are more states, there are more actors involved. And so because of that, it's much more difficult to come to a consensus.
Professor McDaniel, let's talk about easy things and hard things. Easy first. Rhetoric like this, signing a pledge like this, maybe even filing a bill, all fairly easy things to do. But then you talk about getting it to create that momentum that we talked about a moment ago, and actually getting this initiative in front of voters, much less getting that initiative passed. Those things can be very hard. And then let's talk about the much, much harder, and that is to actually execute this if you ever did get it through all of those stages. And let's say that the rest of the U.S. just decided, well, go ahead, Texas, go ahead and go then, which is highly unlikely, to say the least. But if indeed, the state got its way and did all of those things, talk about the practicality of this and the challenges that the state would face in trying to become its own entity like that. It's an enormous thing that we're talking about here.
Yeah. So Texas would, there are a lot of things the federal government provides. So about a third of Texas's budget comes from the federal government. So plan on taxes going up. So we don't have income tax. Well, if you become a nation, you will need an income tax because of building infrastructure. Furthermore, if you look at where Texas is in terms of water rights, I mean, it's fighting with a bunch of different states over water rights. And they're to go to the federal government and say, hey, can you help us out? But if you're a completely separate entity, the federal government is no longer invested in you. We are already seeing a move from the U.S. to try to move away from fossil fuels. And we know oil is very important in Texas. The Texas delegation is no longer there. Well, it allows those who want to move away from oil more freedom to do so. So that will severely undercut the economy. Even though Texas has been able to bring in a lot of jobs, if you become another country, well, that means you're exporting. And there are certain taxes and things like that you have to go through. Just like, you know, we think about what the United Kingdom is learning about Brexit, is that it sounds nice, but carrying it out is a lot more difficult. And I really do think that while it sounds like a great idea, pulling it off will be highly problematic.
And you might also have, I guess, a lot of businesses that would want to flee the state at that point. And you'd have the possibility that there would be quite a few people in these, you know, major cities, these quote unquote blue cities in Texas that would say, well, we want our own space now, too, then separate from you.
Yeah. So I believe Texas does have that Texas can break up into five smaller states. And that has been one plan. Maybe have three that are Republican leading, two that are Democrat leading. That's been one plan. But if this does happen, because this kind of throws everything kind of crazy, expect a mass exodus from the state. And so a lot of the gains the state has made will go away very quickly when it decides to become its own independent nation.
But as somebody who studies government, you don't see this happening in the next few years, do you?
No. No, it's something like this. You would hear saber rattling, but you would hear this from various officials. So you would the governor, lieutenant governor. You would have more conversations about this, like in the state legislature, but you're not really having those conversations. And the bills that are being presented are more symbolic, but I don't see anything like this happening anytime soon. I know there are people who want it. But it's one of these things that once you get it, do you really know what you're going to do with it?
Well, let me ask you about this. The Texas Nationalist Movement turned in what it says were 140,000 voter signatures to try to get this on the Republican ballot last month for Super Tuesday. 140,000, of course, out of, 18 million people who are registered to vote in the state is not a lot. This is just the threshold to get it on the ballot. The Republican Party of Texas rejected that. That's kind of surprising considering where the RPT is right now. Why do you think the GOP said, no, we're not interested in putting this before voters?
Well, one thing about it is the GOP, the National Party loses Texas, they're in trouble. So Texas, in many ways, you can think of as being the state that's carrying the flag for conservatives. I think Texas and Florida might be in competition with each other, but if you think a lot about the state that's most actively fighting the federal government, it's Texas.
Right.
So we can think of maybe California and New York as carrying the flag for the liberal states. And if Texas is no longer part of the union, that means the Texas delegation is no longer in Congress. Texas no longer has all those electoral college votes. And so the Republican Party realizes that if Texas leaves, they lose a lot of control in the House. They lose two in the Senate, and then the influence in the presidential race goes away. So there is a strong investment in the Republican Party nationally to keep Texas in the union because it is such a great resource for them.
That being said, you know, we are a two-party system here, obviously, but, you know, effectively here in Texas for the past couple of decades, it's been, you know, one-party rule, and that is the Republican Party. One interesting that I found on the Take Texas Back website where they're listing all of the people who have pledged to be a part of this, they had both candidates on there who are in the running to replace the current head of the Texas GOP. So both of the people vying for that job, according to the website, have signed this pledge along with a state GOP vice chair candidate. How significant is that if you have the dominant party in this state and at the top of it, you have people who have come out and officially said, this is my position. I have signed this pledge.
This can be a bit worrisome, but what the state party thinks may not necessarily dictate what goes on in the legislature as much as it may have in the past. And so while this is something to be aware of, I don't think they will act on it as much. I think it might be more symbolic that it is something that'll be substantive. But the fact that the party is saying this is a reason to keep this in mind. But I don't think just because the party chair says this that everybody's going to follow through with it. And the thing about it is the people who are most committed to the party, the party chair, they do not look like the rank and file members of the party. They are much more kind of dyed in the wool, like, you know, they're much much more further to the right, things like that. So while they have that leadership role, it's because no one else is really there challenging the board.
And it might just make those state party conventions a little bit more fiery, maybe.
Yeah.
And Professor, my last question for you here is, you know, there's a lot to be watching in 2024 as we go towards November to see what happens on the election and even after the election. But when it comes to this issue specifically, what are you going to be watching for?
I'm really going to be interested in seeing how many people bring the idea of secession up specifically in state races, because that's where it's going to be important. If you're running for Congress and you say that, or the Senate, that won't fly well. But seeing how many people are using this, especially out in, you know, northern Texas, West Texas, these areas that are not well populated, to see how much of that rhetoric comes in. But then also, once the legislature meets in 2025, how many bills like this are being introduced to, like, at least have a committee to look into this? So those are the kind of things I'll be looking for.
Professor, my last one for you is this. You know, we live in current times, obviously, and so I think that we tend to think that, you know, what's going on in our time is the most significant that it's ever been. If you had to, you know, sort of think back through history here in Texas, how significant is this particular issue right now compared to previous times? I mean, is this really just kind of a smolder and we just know about it more because we're all connected on the internet? Or is this something that seems like a bigger movement or a more organized movement that needs to have a lot of attention paid to it?
So I guess many people think about the idea of a civil war, you're thinking about secession. And I don't think we have the intense feel like over like a single issue or things like that. You know, we don't have somebody beating somebody with a cane on the Senate floor like we did right before the Civil War. So I don't think it's as intense. And Texas, as always, pushed back against the federal government. And, you know, at one point in time when Texas was ruled by the Democrats, the Texas Democratic, state Democratic Party endorsed the Republican for president. And so Texas has always been a little bit different in terms of how it handles things. And I think this is part of the history of Texas. And right now, I see it as more of a smolder. And I don't see it as something that should get a lot of attention right now. I think a lot of it is symbolic. However, if we see increasing number of members of the state legislature and even people trying to run for federal office endorsing this, that's when I'll probably pay much more attention to it.
That's that threshold we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
Eric McDaniel, associate professor in the Department of Government at the University of Texas at Austin. Thanks so much for taking the time to walk through history with us on what has been a sticky subject that has come up many times here.
Well, thank you so much.
Hey, y'all. Want to see the Jasons Talk Politics? Download the WFAA Plus streaming app for your smart TV. And watch the latest episode of Y'allitics each Wednesday night at 8:30.
But here's the thing. The amount of federal money that comes into the state that helps the state with education, with everything else, with you know, emergency response to things, that would have to be filled somehow. You'd have the brain drain. You'd have people leaving the state.
Companies
going somewhere else.
Yeah.
All this responsibility that Texas would now have to start taking over that the federal government's now responsible for.
Well, and two, you know, you've got a federal government that has control over its weapons. It's not, again, it's not just going to let you go to the exit,
right?
Number one, it's definitely not going to let you go to the exit with its weapons. It's going to take those back. And so now how are you going to be doing, you know, once you've left on probably not very good terms?
Fort Bliss and Fort Hood, the two largest military installations on the planet, I believe.
And they'll take all of that with them. But that's not going to happen.
They're not going to cross the border in New Mexico.
Or Oklahoma.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not going to happen. The federal government just doesn't just go quietly like that. And I think a lot of people would also say, like, I kind of love being an American, you know. So
where would you go? Would you stay here?
I've been thinking of my exit strategy for some time, actually. Totally independent of this topic. I've told you for years that one of these days, don't send the search party.
Oh, we never send the search party.
I'm going to be on an island somewhere. A rescue is not needed. It's just going to be me and that soccer ball. You know, what was it, Wilson? Was it a soccer ball?
Yeah. How about Mrs. Wheeler? She won't be there with you?
Well, we'll send for her from time to time. She doesn't want to live on an island. She's not a big beach
type. Does she listen to this podcast?
I hope not. wait, so I have one more thing here.
Are we done yet?
One last thing. We're not done yet. So I said in there that the two candidates who are going for the chair of the state Republican Party, are listed as signatories to this. There are more than two candidates. There's a whole handful of candidates, and there's actually three that are listed on the website.
Right.
One of them reached out to me because I, you know, asked several of them about this. And he reached out, and this is from Ben Armenta, and he says that this is an important issue for Republicans, and he thinks that this is going to be amplified. He doesn't think that Texas should secede from the U.S.,
So read this. So these are the questions you asked in his response.
Right. Do I believe that Texas should secede from the United States? No. Do I believe that Texas can achieve greater prosperity if it's separate from the United States? Not likely, he says, unless the federal government continues to extend its overreach and restrict the liberties of Texans. So he's putting that caveat in there. And then he says, here is what I do believe. I believe the federal government, under Joe Biden and the Democrats, continues to push Texans to take more matters into our own hands, matters in which the federal government should be handling. The border invasion, he says, is Exhibit A. And so he's not outright saying, yeah, I'm going to, you know, actively push for this. But I asked him, like, well, what made you sign this? And, you know, he basically says, you know, that he signed on to it. This topic, he says, has been amplified because of the Republican Party's rejection of this petition in late 2023. And so he thinks it's an important topic.
And more people are talking about it now. So I wonder if this will end up. It didn't make it onto the ballot, as we mentioned, for Super Tuesday for Republican primary voters.
Right.
The state party said, no, we're not going to do that. But if this continues, if you have a diverse group of people like that, you're going to get someone's attention. What's fascinating,
I think, more
to
importantly, the money that's behind it. And there is money behind this movement, this push.
This is most fascinating to me. After all the conversation we just talked to Mr. McDaniel.
Yeah.
And we've discussed this at length here and whether Mrs. Wheeler would join you on an island. He says, no, I don't think that we should secede. And he doesn't think that the state would be, that Texas, the new Republic of Texas, would be any better off being on its own.
Yeah, this is someone who has signed the pledge.
Yeah, and he signed the pledge.
Yeah, so it is an interesting take. So there may be more nuance, as they say, in this than what meets the eye.
It's a space to be in and a space to keep an eye on, isn't it?
We're kidding about some of the corporate words that we love so much in the meetings. You need to get back to our boss. She's waiting to hear from you whether you're going to actually get some work done.
I hope my key card still works.
And I've got a lot of work to get to, too.
84 tabs.
84 tabs worth.
Thanks for making time for us, Wheeler. We appreciate it. And Mrs. Wheeler, it's good to see you again. Thanks for listening to y'all.
She doesn't listen to or watch anything I do. It's okay. I could say anything in this podcast.
Go ahead.
I will do that in future episodes.
Thanks so much for watching. Thanks so much for listening. Always appreciate it. And we will see you next week.
Okay, y'all. The conversation doesn't stop here. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. We're @Yolitics.